Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
Our friend Warren Rogan has a podcast called Sports Forgotten Heroes, but he's not going to let us forget about those heroes that wore the jersey number 53 in the NFL, because today on the Football by Numbers, it's jersey 53 as Warren and I pick a top 10, and it's coming up in just a moment. This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. This is your host, Aaron Hayes, and we're podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron, one day at a time. So with Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff supplying us with the dunes, let's go no huddle through today's football history headlines and birthdays of Hall of Famers.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com, and welcome to another bonus edition of the Football by Numbers series. And we are going to go to jersey number 53 today, and we have a lot of great NFL players to talk about. There is no worries, because we have a little bit of help tonight. We have our friend Warren Rogan from the Sports Forgotten Heroes podcast, and he is joining us to because he's got a couple guys that he really is interested in talking about. Let's bring him in right now. Warren Rogan, welcome back to the Pigpen.
Hey, glad to be here. I see you clean things up. It doesn't smell too bad in there today.
it's the beginning of the week, so we do a little cleanup. Last time you were on near the end of the week, maybe.
I'm glad to be back, Darren. Thank you so much.
We really have been enjoying ourselves. We enjoyed when you were on. We've had a lot of great guests. We've talked about a lot of great NFL football players. And this is really an exciting journey through there. Mm-hmm. We're over halfway through the NFL's jersey numbers. And it's kind of an exciting time.
Yeah. You know, you do this a couple years from now with the way they're letting everybody change numbers. You might get some weird positions with straight, you know, you might see a number 53 one day playing quarterback. That might not be the most normal of things.
Right. It's going to be some odd ones, you know, especially when we start seeing the single digits in the backfield and out in the wide out. So it's going to be interesting. It sure is.
Definitely.
So, but it's really taken us back to where it was 100 years ago, you know, because there was no numbering restrictions back then.
Yeah. So. You know, it's an interesting thing. You know, if you look back at the history of numbers in sports, I think perhaps baseball might have been the first, and it was the Yankees. And when the Yankees did it, they gave players numbers based on where they batted in the batting order. So, you know, Babe Ruth batted third, so he was number three. Lou Gehrig batted fourth, so he was number four. And that's how the Yankees assigned numbers.
Yeah, I've heard some theories of early NFL football. Whoever was the best player would have the lowest number. They would be like number one would be the best player. That's why you saw players changing a lot of numbers early on. Yeah, they were jockeying for that number one spot is what I was told. I don't have that in fact, but some pretty reliable sources told me. And it makes sense. You see, in the way they change numbers.
Yeah, I also find it interesting that in the NFL, they sort of assign numbers, or up until now, they've assigned numbers to particular position groups. You know, I think Tom Brady might have a legitimate beef, you know, throughout his entire career. All the quarterbacks throughout their entire career, they're able to identify certain roles on defense by number. There's a couple of outliers, but now it's going to change. It's going to be interesting.
Put a little bit of pressure on the offense. They've had it pretty easy for the last 30 years or so. Defense has been taking all the heat. So, but hey, you last time you were on, we were talking about your podcast, you know, Sports Forgotten Heroes. And as promised, you told us that your topics were going to be sort of seasonal, sports seasonal. And really, you've really came through on that, because the last couple have been on some very interesting golfers, you know, Craig Wood and Denny Shute, which I thought were both fabulous podcasts. And your guests were very interesting. And so were their stories. I'm glad you told them. Do you have anything coming down the pipe that maybe we could be looking forward to?
Yeah, in fact, I try to stay seasonal, like you just mentioned, and we're getting towards the end of basketball with the NBA playoffs in full swing. My next podcast will be June 1st, and it is going to be about Archie Clark, terrific NBA player who came up with the Lakers during Elgin Baylor's time, Gail Goodrich, and Archie is my guest. So really? I have Archie on with me, along with the author of a book called Shake and Bake. And that book chronicles the very interesting career of Archie Clark. Archie basically brought the shake and bake move to the NBA. And he was also the guy who, for lack of a better term, brought the fadeaway to the NBA. The step back. He brought the step back. But bigger than all of that, Archie challenged owners before players really went after the big money. Archie wasn't ready to sit there and just take what the owners offered him. And he held out quite a few times, engineered some trades. And Archie was one heck of a basketball player, an all-star, terrific guard, but never won the NBA championship. He is the answer to a very good trivia question, which is, who did the Lakers trade to the Philadelphia Warriors to get Wilt Chamberlain? And the answer is Archie Clark, of course, with a couple of other fringe players. It was Archie Clark. And the owner of the Lakers at the time, Jack Kent Cooke, wanted to bring Wilt Chamberlain out to the West Coast and put the Lakers on the map and put a big guy in his new LA Forum and try to win a championship. And Archie left LA and went to Philadelphia, and that began a pretty long journey, an interesting journey for Archie Clark. And I have him on my podcast. Debuts June the 1st, and it's a terrific show.
Wow, he sounds like he's a true pioneer on and off the court. You know, have the shake and bake and the fadeaway move on the court, and you know, some player negotiation tactics off the court. That sounds like a very interesting one. We'll definitely have to make sure we check that out. So, you know, Sports Forgotten Heroes, everybody, don't forget about that. June 1st, we got you here because we have a very interesting jersey number in our journey through the NFL numbers. We started at zero. We've got all the way up to jersey number 53. And we've got five gentlemen that the Pro Football Hall of Fame has declared wore the number 53 during their careers. And I'll read their names off real quick here. We can go into a little bit more detail in a second. It's Harry Carson, Mick Tinglehoff, Alec Wojahowicz, Len Ford, and Mike Webster. Yeah. And some very interesting names there. And I know one really particularly tickles your fancy that I think you wanted to come on for.
Yep, absolutely. Harry Carson. And we'll have our little debate. I think, and, you know, we've discussed it previously. It's really interesting to me that the NFL is over 100 years old now, and sometimes it is difficult to come up with a top 10 list of players, deserving players to be called top 10, to wear a particular number. And wow, I think that this is one of those numbers that I was actually pretty surprised was as difficult a task to create a top 10 list from.
Yeah, it is. We've been finding a lot of these numbers sort of in the late 40s, early 50s. I shouldn't say all of them. Some are pretty easy and cut and dried. You're trying to figure out which of the 12 players you want to cut down to 10. But a lot of these numbers like this one, it's a little bit tricky to get 10. But I have a theory on that. And I think a lot of it has to do with the way statistics were recorded. One thing, registering sacks and giving credit to sacks only came in the early 1980s.
Right.
Tackles were sort of around that mid 80s, early 90s, I think, when they started recording how many tackles a guy had. And I think with a lot of film study, and there's a lot of people going back into some of those older games. I know like the Pro Football Journal has started doing that on some older players, giving them credit for sacks, going through old game film and scorecards and whatever they can get their hands on. And it's,
yeah,
kind of some interesting things. We're getting some statistics we never saw before from those earlier players.
Yeah, I wish that they could really do that thoroughly. And they'll probably get it pretty darned close, but obviously there's not film of every single game that's ever been played. And even if there was, as we just alluded to, not everybody wore a number. And if you didn't wear a number, sometimes it's, like they say, you need a scorecard to tell who the players are, right?
Right. And if they were being filmed back in those early days, you may only have one camera. You don't have like the 20 of them you have now, and you don't have the all 22 view and things like that that are give you some great angles. So.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll tell you my top 10 list and you can argue it. You can argue it and we'll go, I'll count it down.
Oh, okay. You got them in order even. Okay.
Yeah. So I'll go my number 10, and this might be a surprise. He plays now and he hasn't been around for that long, is Darius Leonard.
Oh, okay.
Number 9, Rod Martin. Number 8, a guy who I'm sure you are quite familiar with, Marquise Pouncey.
Okay.
Number 7 is Bill Romanowski. Number 8, and I'm actually surprised this guy is not in the Football Hall of Fame, is Randy Gradishar. Guy was a stud.
Yeah, that is hard.
Number 5, Alex Wojciechowicz. Number 4, Mick Tinglehoff. Number 3, another guy you're quite familiar with, Mike Webster, and he's an interesting story, obviously. Number 2, Len Ford. And my number 153, I'm a homer, I'm calling it, Harry Carson.
Very interesting. Very similar. I have a couple that I had a little bit differently, but I there was a couple I guess I'm not sure about, but Leonard I did not have on there. So why don't we start with him? Why don't you tell us a little bit about Leonard?
Sure. So you mean Len Ford?
No, who did you have as your number 10, the first name?
I'm sorry, Darius Leonard.
Darius Leonard, yes, sir.
Colts. Like I said, I had trouble coming up with players who I felt were deserved of being in the top 10. And certainly Darius Leonard has a long way to go in his career. He's only been around for, 3 full years with the Colts. During this time, he's got 7 interceptions, and he returned 1 for an 80-yard touchdown, 4 fumble recoveries. He's got 15 sacks, and he was, in 2018, the NFL Defensive Rookie of the Year. Twice He has been named first team All-Pro, and that's 2018 and 2020. He was a second team All-Pro in 2019. He's played in two Pro Bowls. He led the league in tackles his rookie year, 2018. And in college, ironically, he played at South Carolina State, which is a great bookend because my number one player, Harry Carson, played at South Carolina State. He was all MEAC. And, I just think that his trajectory is on the up. He is a stud for the Colts. They build their defense around him. You know, he's an outside linebacker. And right now, I just don't see, in my research, someone that has proven to be better wearing the number 53 that I left off this list.
Okay. Well, here's the two players that I had different. And one I had,
you're probably going to make a great case. And I'll say, you know what? I forgot about him.
Well, this is an interesting name. And I think it's because he was substantial. Now he doesn't have a lot of statistics to him, but Jim Youngblood is who I had as my 10th player.
Okay. And everybody knows Jack Youngblood.
Right. Right. And, but you know, Jim was a pretty good player too. I believe the same teams. I think they were on the same defenses for many years. Yeah, 73 to 84. So that's quite a bit of crossover, but he was a great linebacker. And I think he was very impactful at the linebacker position for the Rams in those mid to late 70s and early 80s.
No doubt. He was definitely,
The other player I had that was a little different than you is Mark Stepnoski, who I actually graduated high school with. He's from Erie, Pennsylvania. Went to Cathedral Prep High School with me, and we graduated the same year. And he was Troy Aikman's center for those great Dallas Cowboy teams. You know, five Pro Bowls. You know, won two Super Bowls. Was on the All 1990s team, and long career with the Cowboys. He was there for 9 years and then spent 4 years with Houston. And then when they moved to Tennessee, he went, followed them up there. So, you know, nice 13 year career at center. He was by far the smallest guy on that Dallas line back there in the 90s, weighing in at 269 pounds and 6'2", but he was a great player. And, I know him. So I had to put one in there for Mark.
Yeah. He was with them when they won a couple of Super Bowls. And you're right. You know, statistics certainly play a role in all of this. And it's very hard sometimes to, especially for an offensive lineman, it's very hard to rank them and frankly, to do the proper research on them if you're not really diving in deep and studying film and seeing all these people. I mean, unfortunately, as important a role as offensive linemen play in the game, not to belittle any other role of any other position in the NFL, I think offensive linemen might be the least known players in football. And their role, I mean, left tackle, if it's a lefty quarterback, the right tackle. I mean, my gosh, as a Giants fan, those offensive lines that helped them win Super Bowls were so crucial. And you saw how important that was because the weakness on the Giants with their offensive lines has certainly hurt. It hurt Manning towards the end, and it has certainly hurt Daniel Jones as early on in his career.
Yeah, you've had a lot of young quarterbacks that don't have good offensive lines, that get picked number one. Hopefully Mr. Lawrence doesn't experience that same thing this year, but there's a lot of different quarterbacks that have had their careers sort of ruined because of being gun shy but just getting pounded. But there's a trump card for Mark Stepnoski, and I think I'm going to play it right now. He blocked for the NFL's all-time leading rusher. That's got to say something.
No doubt. I mean, yeah, Emmett gained a couple of yards with the Cowboys, didn't he?
Yeah. Some of them were A-gap, you know, so you got to give the center a little credit.
You could put Stepnoski on that list. I do think that the trajectory of a Darius Leonard could maybe one day pass a Stepnoski.
Quite possibly.
And maybe I overlooked Stepnoski. Well, I did overlook Stepnoski. I could make an argument that maybe I should have put Stepnoski at number 10. And that's why we do these kinds of shows and have these kinds of lists. But I just think that Darius Leonard is, you know, if he continues to play at the rate he's playing, he'll be higher than number 10 someday.
I don't disagree with you, but I'm not even disagreeing with that Leonard shouldn't be on that list. I'm saying he maybe replaces even somebody else on the list.
Could be.
And
could absolutely.
I mean, we've got some things to think about here. I mean, first of all, we've got two of our Hall of Famers that only wore the number 53 for two seasons.
Yeah, Mike Webster was one of them.
Mike Webster and Len Ford.
Yeah.
Let's go this way. Let's put our two people we probably definitely agree, both because of longevity and they were great players. You know, Harry Carson definitely is on that list. There's no doubt about it. And I think Mick Tinglehoff, with 17 years wearing a jersey number 53, being a Hall of Famer and all his other credentials. I think
he's center too.
I think those are two automatics to be on there. And I think the rest are kind of somewhat debatable. We can have some fun with the rest of them, but definitely don't want to have those guys even be in a discussion of not being.
Yeah. You know, the thing about, it's so hard sometimes with these guys who only wore the jersey number for a few short years and are better remembered for their other jersey number, like a Webster who wore 52. But how do you keep him off the list? It's so hard.
Well, being a Steelers fan, I don't know him as a 53. So he was a Kansas City Chief, I believe, when he was a 53.
Yeah, you know, it's such an interesting story, too, because he left the Steelers and was going to coach with the Chiefs. And so he becomes an offensive line coach with the Chiefs. And they go, you know what? You're just still too darn good. Would you come back and play? And he says, sure. So he ends up playing 2 years with the Chiefs wearing 53. How do I leave him off the list?
I hear you. And he's one of my heroes. I grew up with him being the center for all those years, you know?
And then you get a guy like Len Ford, you know, he's another one with such an interesting story. He played first in the All-America Football Conference with a team called the Los Angeles Dons. And for those who don't know it, the Los Angeles Dons were actually named for one of the team's owners, Don Ameche, the actor. So,
oh, okay. I didn't realize that.
They were actually, that's who he is. The Dons were named for. You know, he played, he was a defensive end. And he also, on the offense, he played left end. We probably better know that now as a tight end type position. Elected into the Hall of Fame in 1976. But he really made, you know, he played for the Dons. He played for the Browns. He played for the Packers. But he's best known for his time with the Browns. So he leaves college. He was a big dude for back then. He was 6'5", and he played for Michigan. And I think the greatest team, or whom people say was the greatest Michigan team, was the 47 team, and Len was on that team. And this was during all the color line and race and racism and all that. And in 1948, the NFL had a 32-round draft, and not a single team went out on a limb to take Len Ford. Well, the AAFC was trying to establish itself, and they didn't care what the color of your skin was. And the Los Angeles Dons took Len Ford. So his first year, again, we're talking statistics. Defensive statistics are hard to come by. But offensively, he had 31 catches for 598 yards and 7 touchdowns. And he followed that up with 36 catches for 577 yards and a touchdown. Well, after the 49 season, the AAFC folded shop and they took in a couple of teams. They took in the San Francisco 49ers and they took in the Cleveland Browns. And the Cleveland Browns were, they were a machine. They were the best football team on the planet, period, bar none. Sorry, Steeler fans. Sorry, football fans. Sorry, Giants fans, but that's just the way it is. The Browns were the best. Paul Brown assembled a team. And when they went to the NFL, again, Brown didn't care about the color of your skin. If you could play football, he wanted you on his team. And he knew how good Len Ford was. And he took Len Ford with him to Cleveland. Well, with Cleveland, he was an absolute stud. 6 times in 8 years, he helped the Brown, and Brown pulled him off the offense and strictly made him a defensive end. And during his 8 years with the Browns, 6 times they played for the NFL championship. They won it 3 times. He was a defensive end on the NFL's 1950s all-decade team. And when he retired, he held the NFL record of 20 fumble recoveries. A superior athlete during the offseason, he played in the National Basketball League for an all-black team called the New York Renaissance. Len Ford, you know, again, I'm a homer. I named Harry Carson number one. Len Ford could easily be the number one, number 53 of all time. But like you said, he also wore a couple of different numbers. He wore 50, he wore 80, and he wore 83.
But I see, I think there's a little bit different. So if we are looking at Webster wearing it for 2 years at the last 2 seasons of his career, where he wasn't, you know, he was a good player, but he wasn't at the highlight of his career. I think you could say that Len Ford wearing the 53 in his third and fourth seasons first 2 seasons in the NFL, but third and fourth seasons in pro football, that he was sort of at the pinnacle of his career. You know, Paul Brown, like you said, switched him over to defense. He was really finding himself. And he's one that would be interesting to see if, you know, Pro Football Journal has some sacks on him, because I can't imagine he had to be way up there in sacks, you know, in tackles for loss, which we don't have.
No doubt. It's like baseball, the saves, right? Saves didn't become an official stat until what, the 70s, you know? So there are so many relief pitchers way back when, and baseball's tried to do a job of crediting saves back through time. But, you know, you have the same thing in basketball, the 3-point play. I'm quite sure that way back when guys were shooting it from downtown, you're not going to change the score, but you could go back and say, well, this guy would have had X number of 3-pointers, the plus minus rating in the NHL. So yeah, it's hard to quantify some of that stuff. Even Harry Carson, his first couple of years, sacks weren't recorded as an official stat. So it's tough, but I'll tell you, when you look back at the career of a guy like Len Ford, wow, what a stud player. And again, you know, a guy whom so many have never heard of.
Right. That's true. I mean, I'm pretty confident. I have him. I have Len Ford staying on my top 10 list. And it sounds like you have, I mean, you're making a very compelling case for him. And I think we put him on as our third player. That's definitely on that list, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, I absolutely.
Okay. All right. So we got three. Now let's see. I'm still trying to figure out where we were different. You know, the other player I didn't have, so I didn't have Leonard on my list and I didn't have Martin. So I had Youngblood and Sepnoski, and I'm not convinced with Youngblood.
Well, Rod Martin is, you know, I remember watching him play for the Raiders. He was a linebacker, wore number 53 for the Raiders, spent 12 years with them. Let me call up some of his numbers here. I don't know all this stuff off the top of my head, with the exception of he did play 12 years for the Raiders. He had 14 interceptions, 4 touchdowns. He recovered 10 fumbles, 2 of which he turned into touchdowns. His first 5 years in the NFL, they didn't count sacks. There was no stat at that point either. He still wound up with 33 and a half sacks. He was on the Raiders teams that won the Super Bowl 15 and Super Bowl 18. Twice he played Pro Bowl. He was the first team All-Pro in 1984. 3 times he was a second team All-Pro. I mean, he had a heck of a career. Let's see, how many tackles did he have? Don't see, they didn't have, I don't see that stat for Rod Martin, but he was one of the leaders, 100% one of the leaders on that team. And, you know, he had an 81-yard touchdown reception, interception return for a touchdown, a 77-yard fumble recovery for a touchdown. He was one of the leaders of that defense of those feared Raider teams in the 1980s, the early 1980s. And I remember watching him play.
His statistics are almost identical to Youngblood's. I don't know if you knew that. When you started saying the 14 interceptions, I look back, Youngblood had 14 interceptions, 4 of those returned for touchdowns. Martin had 2 fumble recoveries for touchdowns. You know, Youngblood had 0.
I think what makes the difference for me is it's a hard thing to do, but it's a fact. Martin helped lead his team to 2 Super Bowl victories, and Youngblood didn't.
That's true. That's a big number there. You're right. That's a reward to get you some advancement there.
Yep. So
I guess what I'm questioning, I don't think Youngblood is on that top 10 because you made
and don't forget too, in the Super Bowl against the Philadelphia Eagles, Rod Martin, he had 3 interceptions, I think, in that game.
Really? Oh.
Let's look that up.
Yeah, they should have some playoff.
I think Rod Martin had 3 interceptions. Let's see, playoffs. 1980 Super Bowl, he had 3 interceptions. Martin recorded a Super Bowl record, 3 interceptions off of Ron Jaworski and returned them for 44 yards.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's a pretty big revelation there.
Chuck Howley also had 3 interceptions in Super Bowls, but Martin did it in 1 game.
Wow.
And it also says here that in Super Bowl 28, he sacked Joe Theismann once, tackled John Riggins for no gain on a 4th down on a 4th-and-1 conversion deep in Raiders territory, last play of the 3rd quarter, and he recovered a fumble in the final period. He was clutch. He was a clutch ball player. I think he deserves to be on that list.
So who was that, the Super Bowl that Biletnikoff was the MVP? Because I'm like, how could he not be MVP with 3 interceptions? You know,
that's a good.
It had to be Fred Biletnikoff late in 79? Is that that?
No, it was 1983. Was that on? Oh,
that might have been Plunkett.
Marcus Allen?
Or no, Marcus Plunkett. Allen. Marcus Allen, you're right.
Yeah.
Okay. That's something. That's a story to tell. I had three interceptions in the Super Bowl, and I wasn't the game's MVP.
Crazy, right?
You've made a real good case for him. I think he deserves to be on that top 10 list. So there's our fourth one we agree on. I'm gonna scratch Youngblood because that's nothing. He doesn't have a. Thank God he didn't pick off Terry Bradshaw three times in Super Bowl 13. Talk about one of the Plunkett, Hall of Famers.
And I just looked it up. Plunkett was the MVP in that Super Bowl.
Okay. All right. So let's talk about one of the Hall of Famers we haven't said too much about. And that's Alex Wojciechowicz.
Yeah. He was another interesting story. So Wojciechowicz played. He came up 9 years with the Detroit Lions. And what makes his story interesting to me is that the Lions were a pretty good team. In 1946, they lost their first game of the season, and the coach, Gus Duray, was so perturbed with the play of his offensive line, because Wojciechowicz was a center and a middle linebacker, he cut all four linemen.
Wow.
Cut them all. So the Philadelphia Eagles go ahead and they sign him. They see this guy's a decent ball player. So he goes and he goes to play for the Eagles. So he spends 9 years with the Lions, five with the Eagles. And over the course of his career, 19 interceptions, twice he was a first-team All-Pro, 1940s All-Decade Team, Eagles Hall of Fame. He played at Fordham University and was one of the seven blocks of granite with Vince Lombardi. So he played for Fordham in 36 and 37. When he went to the Eagles, he really wasn't a starter. He came on he would sub in, and he only played defense, but he was a heck of a defender with the Eagles, and he helped them win the NFL championship in 48 over the Chicago Cardinals, and then 49 over the Rams, the Los Angeles Rams. Oh, no, they were the Cleveland Rams at that time. I'm sorry, the Cleveland.
Yeah, I think that was their last year in Cleveland. Their last game as a Cleveland Rams was the championship game. Huh, very interesting.
Well, he was he definitely College Football Hall of Famer, Pro Football Hall of Famer. Like I said, 1940s All-Decade Team. He's in the Fordham University Hall of Fame. What else can he say? He's the Eagles Hall of Fame. The guy was Gus Duray. I don't know what. And I've done a podcast on Gus Duray. He was a heck of a football coach. Could have actually coached at Notre Dame, but gave up the opportunity after Newt Rockne had passed away because Gus was a part of all that. He didn't want to replace Rockne. But Gus Duray was one heck of a coach. I don't know what he was thinking.
Yeah, that's especially they're all two-way players back then. So you're getting rid of a defender too. You're getting rid of your lineman.
Yeah. I mean, he was, and again, you know, he's one of these guys. He was a number 53 with the Eagles for just a couple of years. He did not wear 53 with the Lions, but he certainly made a name for himself for 3 years with the Eagles as a number 53.
But we had covered him a little bit on the number 50s. I had Rich Smelter. He's a PFRA historian, author of a bunch of books. And he had an interesting little tidbit that I'm not 100% that it's true, but it was interesting. On the television show, Barney Miller, the character Wojo, who was one of the police in the precinct, was named after Alex Wojahowicz, is what Rich said he had heard. So
isn't that interesting?
Yeah. So I think one of the writers, the producers, was a big Alex Wojahowicz fan. So he gave him that honor. So
very interesting.
Yeah, that's kind of a cool little story, especially if it's true. So
yeah. I didn't know that. That's very cool.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty neat myself. What do we want to do with Alex? Do we want to put him on as our fifth player? Do we want to?
I have him as number five.
Okay.
I think he's definitely deserving of being up there. I mean, again, number 53, I just found very difficult.
Okay. So we'll put him on at number five. Now, I'm not, I mean, I know he's one of the greatest Steelers ever, Mike Webster. I'm not sold that Webster's on that list yet.
Okay.
As a 53.
Okay.
Well, I'm going to put an asterisk by him. Maybe he's one we can come back and talk to if we have. Okay.
What about Randy Gratishar?
Well, I think Randy Gratishar definitely should be on there.
This guy should be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's no doubt about it. Let's talk about him. Let's tell everybody what's going on with Randy.
He was a linebacker for the Broncos. Was a part of their famous Orange Crush defense that helped the Broncos into the Super Bowl in 77 against the Cowboys. He played for 10 years, had 20 interceptions, three of which he returned for touchdowns, 13 recoveries, fumble recoveries, one of which he returned for a touchdown. He played in seven Pro Bowls, six times was named All-Pro. At that time, I don't know, do they still have all AFC and all NFC? But at that time, they did, and he was all AFC seven times. In 1978, he was the NFL Defensive Player of the Year. He was a two-time All-America at Ohio State. He finished sixth in the Heisman Trophy balloting the year that John Cappelletti won. Anybody ever wants to see, you know, one of those tearjerker stories, watch Something for Joey. Terrific movie about John Cappelletti, Penn State, and John's younger brother, Joey. Gratishar is in the Broncos Ring of Fame. 2008, Pro Football Weekly put together its all-time 3-4 defense. Harry Carson, Lawrence Taylor, Andre Tippett, Howie Long, Curly Cope, Leroy Selman, Randy Gratishar. That ain't bad company to keep.
No, that's a real good lineup there.
You know, how is he? He was tough, man. How is he not in the Hall of Fame? I don't get it.
Yeah, especially you look at him. I mean, he's a Defensive Player of the Year, 1978. There's been less than 100 of them throughout the NFL's career, you know, because I don't know how long that award's been out. But there's a couple of players I know that have won it more than once. So that sort of limits your numbers now. But he's one of, you know, a select few for all the thousands of defensive players that have been in the NFL.
Several times he won major NFL awards, and we know that he was one heck of a football player for Ohio State. He was the leader of that Orange Crush defense when, you know, that year that they went and played in the Super Bowl, they only gave up 198 points, and that's in 16 games. He was the NFL's linebacker of the year as named by Football Digest. I don't understand. And maybe he should be higher up on our list.
Yeah, that's a good possibility right there. Now, that's kind of interesting. And I don't know. I'm just looking at Pro Football Reference. In 1975, they have him down just as a middle linebacker. And in 76, for the rest of his career, he was either right inside or left inside linebacker. So I wonder if he went from a 3-4 to a 4-3. Defense, but he made the Pro Bowl both positions.
Yeah, I mean, he was that good.
So that's a pretty dramatic change for a middle linebacker. You have a different scheme, different responsibility in those two defenses.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, that he's pretty good. And I think he's definitely on that list. So I'm going to put him as our sixth player. Definitely has earned that. And like you say, he should be in Canton. No doubt about it. Maybe we'll see him with some of the more seniors are supposed to be getting in here in the next year or so.
Yeah, definitely.
Hopefully he can get in there.
My number seven is a guy who was a good football player, but you only liked him if he was on your team. Bill Romanowski.
Yeah, I like him, but he wasn't on my team.
He was tough. I mean, he was tough. He was, you know, he spent 16 years? I played 6 years for the Niners, 2 years for the Eagles, 6 years for the Broncos, 2 years for the Raiders, intercepted 18 passes, recovered 18 fumbles, 39 and a half sacks. He was on 4 Super Bowl winners. 2 times he was a Pro Bowler. He had over 1,100 tackles. And like I said, 39 and a half sacks. He was tough. He was tough.
Yeah. He had those, everybody likes to talk about, Mike Singletary's eyes. I think Romanowski had sort of those same eyes,
Just
focus, laser focus, just staring through the hearts of quarterbacks and running backs, waiting for one of them to get the ball. He was an angry player on the field. I'll say that.
Yeah. And I think that's the knock against him, where I say that if he was on your team, you loved him. But if he wasn't, you didn't like him. Because there were a lot of instances with him, rightly or wrongly, on the field where he had a lot of altercations, not only with the opponent, but sometimes with his own teammates. He was intense, like you say. Like, you remember those eyes from Singletary? Yeah. Romanowski, he'd get on the field. He was intense.
Mm-hmm. That doesn't make you a bad player. I think you have to have some of that that will to, get your opponent and, whatever means necessary, sometimes.
Yeah, Darren, we don't like to talk all that much about the negative things. But I think the knock against Romanowski was, some of those on-the-field altercations. He kicked Larry Centers of the Cardinals. I think he spit on J.J. Stokes. And these aren't allegations. These are things caught on film, and he was fined and or suspended for these things. He had his altercation. But off the field, he seems like a fun guy. I think he was in some movies, on some TV shows. Regardless of all that, one heck of a football player, and I think absolutely deserving of being on our top 10 list of players to have worn the number 53, and he wore it on every team he played for his entire career.
That's true. Very true. And yeah, those are some great teams he played on, what can you say? The San Francisco teams of the late 80s.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
He played in 5 Super Bowls and he won 4 of them.
Denver wasn't too shabby either.
No, he played on their championship teams with Elway, I believe.
Right.
Yeah.
So played with some pretty good quarterbacks, with Montana, Young, Elway.
Yeah, he sure did.
Not bad company.
Yep.
Okay, I have him. I agree with you. He's our 7th on our list for our top 10. So we have 3 spots open.
All right. Well, we got one of your guys, Maurkice Pouncey, recently retired Maurkice Pouncey. He was in the league for 11 years, but he only played 10. 2015, he missed the whole year with his, I think he broke his leg. Sidebar, you think about the centers that the Steelers have had over the years. What have they had? What have they had? 4 centers in the last 30 years? I don't know.
Yeah, well, a little bit more than that. You had a couple, some Super Bowl winning centers, like Hartwig was a center for, I think, their win over the Cardinals. But yeah, you're right. You know, from Webster to Dermoni Dawson to Pouncey, and you know, hopefully they drafted their new one this year. He's wearing the Pouncey's number already.
50. Yeah, I mean, you know, three times he was an All-Pro, two times second-team All-Pro. He played in 9 Pro Bowls. All-rookie team in 2010, all-decade team of the 2010s, played at Florida where he won a national championship, and for now he's retired. I think he's got to be on that list.
Oh, I most definitely think so. You know, it's still short in our memories that his last game, unfortunately, the first play of that last game was sort of set the bar rolling poorly for the Steelers against the Browns when he snapped it in the end zone. That wasn't a good start, but that's not what I like to remember him by. And even his injury, the season he missed, it was such a freak thing. The Steelers had just gone to a zone blocking scheme, and a young player named David DeCastro ended up cutting Pouncey and injured him. And nobody felt worse that whole season than DeCastro to lose your leader that was blocking right beside you, especially when you're a young player. But I think Pouncey needs to be on that list.
Yeah,
or 8th spot. Good ball player.
So we had I had number 2 Len Ford, 3 Webster, 4 was Tinglehoff, who we really didn't talk a whole lot about, but he played for 17 years, inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2015. 6 times a Pro Bowler, 5 times he was a first-team All-Pro. Ring of Honor for the Vikings, recovered 13 fumbles. He is one of only 11 players to play in all 4 Super Bowls that the Vikings appeared in. Helped the Vikings to an NFL championship in 69. Then they lost the Super Bowl to the Chiefs. And then, you know, when he retired, he had played in 240 straight games. Only Jim Marshall had played in more, and that was 270. So, Tinglehoff has definitely got to be on that list. We have Woja Howitz, Randy Gradishaw, Romanowski, Marquise Pouncey. I put Rod Martin on there. We have our discussion about Darius Leonard. You brought up
Stepnoski,
no doubt. So that to me is 9 guys. And the only guy we haven't talked about is my number 1, Harry Carson.
Well, we're saving him for the last. So that's okay. Wait, so let's see 9. And Leonard is our 10th. Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. So, okay.
Let me make my case for Harry Carson.
Okay.
my case for Harry Carson, 9 times a Pro Bowler, came out of a small school, South Carolina State, helped transform the Giants that had just been one of the, the doormats of the NFL for so long, helped transform them into a Super Bowl contender and helped lead them to the Super Bowl in 86. He played in the shadow of LT for a couple of years, but he mentored and tutored LT on how to become an NFL, how to conduct himself on a football field. Harry was inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2006. One of the things that a lot of people don't know about Harry is over the course of his career, suffered 15 concussions.
Wow.
That's one of the sad things about Webster, how his life ended because of, concussions. When he played at South Carolina State, Harry Carson, he had this other guy on his team. You might have heard of him, Donnie Shell. He played with Harry at South Carolina State. Also a great baseball player played with Harry at South Carolina State, Willie Mays Akins. Harry was on one of the what I think is one of the all-time great linebacking crews in NFL history. We called them the Big Blue Wrecking Crew. And that team, you know, like I said, helped the Giants win the Super Bowl. And the Big Blue Wrecking Crew was made up of Harry, Lawrence Taylor, Brad Van Pelt, and Brian Kelly. Harry appeared in 9 different playoff games. Let's see, his career was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 13-year career. Harry was one of the guys who started the Gatorade shower. Remember, the Giants were the first team to do that. They poured the Gatorade over Parcells. First guy to do it was Jim Burt, and then along came Harry Carson. So really, he was one of the founders of pouring the Gatorade over the coach. He had, again, like we said earlier, sacks weren't counted his first couple of years, but he had 19 sacks over the course of his career. Of course, he played alongside LT, and LT was doing most of the sacking at that time. Harry also had 11 interceptions. Bill Parcells always made sure that Harry Carson stood next to him for the national anthem. It was Harry Carson was Bill Parcells' good luck charm. And one of the big reasons.
Are you sure it wasn't because he wanted to make sure he wasn't grabbing that Gatorade bucket before the game started?
Yeah, maybe. Get him before the game started. Bill Belichick, when you ask Bill Belichick to compare a player today to Lawrence Taylor, Bill Belichick will say, end of discussion. You can't compare anybody to Lawrence Taylor, though he's come close with J.J. Watt. Whether you like Bill Belichick or not, you got to respect what the guy has done over the course of his career. Again, whether you like him or not. And, you know, he was the defensive coordinator for the New York Giants, helped construct those defenses that won those 2 Super Bowls, 86 and 91. And Belichick said this, you know, LT is the greatest, period. But he also said of Harry Carson that he is the best all-around linebacker he ever coached. That's pretty high praise. And when all is said and done, a Hall of Famer, 9 times a Pro Bowler, helped to tutor, mentor Lawrence Taylor, was part of the Big Blue Wrecking Crew. I got him number 1 on my list. All right, maybe I'm partial.
I don't disagree with you. I think he's the star that shines the brightest of these number 53s. Totally agree with you. He's number 1 on our list, and you know, we have the 9 other gentlemen. I'll just go through the names real quick. So we have, you know, said Harry Carson, Mick Tinglehoff, Alex Wojciechowicz, Len Ford, Bill Romanowski, Darius Leonard, Mark Stepnoski, Marquise Pouncey, Randy Gratishar, and Rod Martin in no particular order.
In no particular order.
Yeah, that's a great team. Now, there's a couple players that we probably ought to mention that are probably fringe players that we didn't talk about yet.
Okay.
And one of them's Ray Donaldson. And Ray Donaldson, you know, great center, came in 1980 with the Baltimore Colts at the time. And stayed with Indianapolis all the way to 1992, a couple years of Seattle and Dallas, retired after the 96 season. He had 6 Pro Bowls to his credit and won a Super Bowl. And Kevin Glover's the other one, another great center guard, played 1985, came in with the Detroit Lions and stayed there till 97, couple final seasons, 98, 99 with the Seattle Seahawks. But he had 3 Pro Bowls to his credit. So both good centers, both interior linemen were good players.
Yeah,
but,
like you said, it's so hard to measure some of these guys that didn't have stats, and that's a shame.
Right. But they're substantial players, and that's what we're here. We want to make sure we try to recognize as many of them as we can. Not top 10, but definitely some good players.
No doubt. No doubt.
I know you told us what's coming up on the June 1st episode. What do you have in the works on some future podcasts? Sure.
We're in the baseball season right now. I have coming up an episode about terrific ball player by the name of Zach Wheat. Zach Wheat played for the Dodgers in the early 1900s, 1920s. Guy was a hitting machine, had over 2,800 career hits, played for just about 20 years. Another guy like Archie Clark, who stood up for his rights, always fighting to get the bigger contract, held out a couple of times, had his battles with Charles Ebbets, and dealt a lot with injuries, was a terrific defensive ball player, is a Hall of Famer. And I got an episode coming up about Zach Wheat. And I also have an episode coming up about Jack Quinn, who was a turn-of-the-century ball player, pitcher with the Yankees, and also played in what's called the Federal League, and Harold Emke as well. These two guys were comeback. They left. They were both pitchers, terrific pitchers during the turn of the century, and working on a couple others. Actually, I think I'm going to be doing a show about John Bassett. And got a couple others. Don't want to talk too much about them until I have them solidified. But we're into baseball season now. And so after the Archie Clark show, it'll be a couple of baseball episodes in a row with John Bassett thrown in the middle for his work in football.
Wow, you just keep pulling those rabbits out of your hat, these great forgotten heroes. I'm glad you're reminding us of them because, like I said, there's many of them that I listened to your program and I've never heard of, and I'm sure glad that I've listened and learned a little bit. If somebody goes and tunes into Warren's podcast and you don't learn something out of it, then there's something wrong because you do a great detail. Your guests are interesting. They're experts at whoever they're talking about, and it's really fascinating pieces that you talk about.
I appreciate that so much. It's, you know it. You got to do your research. This is, we could speak off the cuff a little bit, but there's so much detail. There's so much to learn. And the one thing I try not to be is more knowledgeable about a subject than my guest. I don't want that, but I got to do the research so you ask the right questions and you glean that information out of them.
Yeah, and you definitely do that. You guide them right through some great stories, and we're very appreciative of that. And we're appreciative that you joined us here tonight for this endeavor. And I think we've got you for some other numbers coming up here real soon. So we can look forward to Warren and some more episodes here, a few episodes from here, I believe. I think you're down for 56s. I think we have another interesting giant you want to talk about there.
Yeah, some guy named Lawrence Taylor.
Right. So,
the list starts and stops with him.
So Warren, we appreciate your time, and thank you again for coming on, and we'll talk to you here in a couple episodes.
You got it. Anytime, Darren.
All right. Thanks, Warren.
We're taking a peek over at the chains and the down marker. It's fourth and long. We're going to have to punt the ball and get on out of here, but we'll have another series tomorrow for your football history headlines, so be sure to tune in.
We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. PigskinDispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast. PigskinDispatch.com is a proud affiliate of the Sports History Network, the headquarters of sports yesteryear.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that, Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts. It's found right here on the Sports History Network.